Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Tim Cortese. Today, we are here with Dr. Frank McCormick. He is a professor in the Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center, and he also holds the David A. Wood Distinguished Professorship of Tumor Biology and Cancer Research at UCSF. Throughout his career, he's researched KRAS for 40 years, and he also helped lead the National Cancer Institute's RAS initiative. And just recently, he was the inaugural recipient of the Stevenson Global Pancreatic Cancer Research Institute's Stevenson Global Prize. Thank you for agreeing to talk to me, Dr. McCormick. I really appreciate your time. Just to kick this off, KRAS was considered undruggable for so many years. What was it about the biology that made it so resistant to conventional drug development strategies? What clicked? What changed?
Great question. Just first of all, declare that personally, I never thought that KRAS was undruggable. And I knew it was difficult, but undruggable sounds sort of defeatist. But I've felt, as many people have felt, that it's just a question of getting the technology to the point where we can actually take on such a difficult target. And it's not the biology that makes it difficult, it's the chemistry of the protein itself. The protein, unlike many other proteins that have been targeted for cancer therapy and other therapies, doesn't have any obvious pockets where a drug can bind. So it's been described as a squishy tennis ball. And so it doesn't have a sort of a hole where a drug can fit in and block its function. So finding a way of getting small molecule drugs to actually interact with a squishy tennis ball is just technically very difficult because the methods just weren't around until relatively recently. And then people had found compounds previously to that which had bound, but without a detailed knowledge of the protein, they didn't really go anywhere. And then things picked up in 2012, actually, when a group of Genentech and another group found fragments of chemicals that could bind to the RAS protein using new technology, which is very sophisticated. And then Kevan Shokat at UCSF found a way of attacking one particular form of the KRAS protein through an amino acid called cysteine, which is exposed in the protein. And that cysteine could be attacked with a chemical that reacts directly and covalently with the cysteine. So that gave a handle on a drug that bound to the protein for the first time. And then from that and other parallel approaches, it's sort of the whole thing just crumbled, and more people found ways of getting into the protein and more versions of it. And so over the time since the 2012, 2013 timeframe, there's now 30 or 40 different drugs that bind to KRAS in slightly different ways, but all in the same, using the same principle.
You also helped lead the NCI's RAS initiative. Why was an initiative specifically targeted toward working with RAS necessary? And what were maybe the one or two breakthroughs that happened during that movement that was like the biggest like shifts in progress?
Yeah, so the RAS initiative was started by Harold Varmus, Nobel laureate, who was then head of the National Cancer Institute. And he was under a lot of pressure from advocates and patients that to try and make better progress in treating pancreatic cancer, which at that point had no therapies at all that could provide any patient benefit. So pancreatic cancer is almost always caused by KRAS. So we decided that by focusing on KRAS, we could potentially make an impact on pancreatic cancer. So Harold basically liberated a group of people at a place called Frederick, Maryland, in an NCI-funded project, and said, okay, we've got 50 people here, let's put them to work on KRAS, finding ways of targeting KRAS. So he asked me to lead that effort. So in 2013, I took over I started the leadership effort of the RAS initiative. And the goal was to find drugs that target KRAS in the form of KRAS that causes pancreatic cancer. Now that form is different to the one that Kevan Shokat had already got a sort of home run hit on, and the cysteine mutant I mentioned, which causes lung cancer. So we started a kind of parallel track, and we found compounds that bind to the forms of KRAS that cause pancreatic cancer from our own internal work and inspired by Kevan's work and others who made major contributions to this whole big project and a big team effort. And now we have, we ourselves have developed three drugs which are currently in clinical trials for pancreatic cancer. And as you are well aware, The rest of the world has also developed drugs that target KRAS for pancreatic cancer and for lung and for colorectal cancer.
That's fantastic. You alluded to some of the drugs in clinical trials, but after having spent so long researching KRAS, I think the moment a lot of people have recognized kind of how amazing it is when the RASolute 302 data first dropped and daraxonrasib doubled the overall survival versus standard of care. How did that feel, kind of just seeing that happen?
Yeah, that was obviously a wonderful moment for everybody in the field and for patients and all those involved in treating pancreatic cancer. Because up until that point, the progress that had been made in targeting KRAS had really focused on lung cancer, where it's also a major player. But there are already a lot of drugs that have been successful in lung cancer, targeting different proteins that cause lung cancer. So to actually have a home run in pancreatic cancer was a real first, because nothing had been done up until that point. So apart from very incremental changes in survival benefits, there's been no impact really until those clinical data came out. So suddenly the whole field sort of came to life in terms of realizing that targeting pancreatic cancer is really a question of just of getting the right drug and making it making it happen in the clinic. There's nothing intrinsically impossible about pancreatic cancer. It just needed the right drug to target the right protein target. And that was the first, I think, daraxonrasib will be the first of a lot of drugs that are being tested in pancreatic cancer right now, and we can expect them to get more and more potent and less side effects, and just improve the outcome of patients with pancreatic cancer just by building on that result and encouraged by that result, taking more and more drugs forward in pancreatic cancer. Now it's becoming so crowded in pancreatic cancer, it's hard to get a sort of foothold into the clinical research area. And that's a really huge change. People used to avoid trying drugs in pancreatic cancer because they never worked. Now it's like a stampede of drugs coming into pancreatic cancer.
How did daraxonrasib and its mechanism as a RAS(ON) multi-selective inhibitor, how did that kind of achieve this?
Well, the approach that Revolution Medicines took was different from the one that Shokat took and that we took at the RAS initiatives. It uses a cellular protein to help bring RAS together with the drug, so it has like a helper to make the whole complex work. So it's a slightly different mechanism of action, but it does target the on state, as you mentioned, which is also true of the next generation of direct KRAS inhibitors that we developed. Because in pancreatic cancer, the forms of KRAS which cause pancreatic cancer are mostly sort of stuck in the on state all the time. And that makes it even more difficult than the cysteine mutant that causes lung cancer, which tends to cycle between different states. They developed a technology which, with help from another cellular protein, brings the drug to KRAS and turns it off. So it's different, really, as I said, to the rest of the sort of herd of protein of drugs coming down the pipeline. But it still targets KRAS in the on state, which is the name of the game in pancreatic cancer.
As more RAS inhibitors start to move towards clinical use, what resistance mechanisms are you like looking at, and are you kind of anticipating to appear? And then what are some of the strategies for staying ahead of them?
Well, there's different types of resistance events that can happen. Inevitably, tumors will find ways of selecting for mutations in the KRAS protein that no longer bind to the drug. That's a given with any targeted therapy. In this case, they could also find mutations that don't bind to the cellular protein that helps the whole system working. So that will happen at some rate. There will be usually pre-existing clones which have mutations in the protein that just make them insensitive to the drug from the get-go. So the only way around that really is to have another drug which does uses a slightly different binding modality, so the mutations which are resistant to one drug are not resistant to the other. And that we've seen in other paradigms, such as EGF receptor in lung cancer, where there's now a sequential chain of different drugs that have different binding modes to get around that problem. So that basically will be solved by having a whole battery of different KRAS drugs that have different binding modalities, so you can move from one to the next. Then the cell itself can the tumor cells can develop mutations which are sort of downstream from the KRAS and therefore are not dependent on KRAS. That probably will happen at some frequency, but I don't think that's going to be such a major issue. And cell tumor cells can even change the, what they call this, they undergo a state change where they kind of differentiate it into a different beast, and that beast is less KRAS dependent. So all those things have been seen already in lung cancer with the G12C drugs. But still, one can expect durable response rates before these mutations kick in. And then by the time they do, we'll have other drugs that can hopefully step in and pick up when that happens. So you need a whole suite of compounds really to shut down the tumor effectively. And then there are combinations of with KRAS drugs plus other targets which make the KRAS drugs more effective. So you kill more cells up front and get less resistance, and so on. So this path is well trodden from other treating lung cancer and other diseases with targeted therapies. So we have a playbook which we expect to work in pancreatic cancer, and that'll play out over the next 5 years, 10 years, I'm sure.
Thank you. You just touched on combinations, which is a great segue to my next question. In early phase trials, we're starting to see these numbers report. There was a great reporting of a really high response rate with opevesostat and daraxonrasib, but there are also phase threes that are starting to come and develop in different indications, say first line for pancreatic cancer. But what do you think about the emerging combination landscape as a whole, and what principles do you think should guide how these pairings are created?
Yeah, there are a number of different options. For one thing, when you inhibit KRAS, the cells do have a kind of a response by activating other pathways to compensate for the sudden loss of KRAS, and those help them survive. So targeting those short-term adaptive responses makes the KRAS drugs more effective. And so right now, a class of drugs called the PI3 kinase pathway will be tested to prevent that kind of rebound effect. And then there are other classes of combinations which can hopefully wake up the immune system. And that's the paradigm in lung cancer, where the combinations which are much likely to be in the front line will be KRAS drugs plus a checkpoint inhibitor. So because KRAS itself makes cells less visible to the immune system. So in theory, suppressing KRAS should make the tumor cells more visible to the immune system so that drugs that target the immune checkpoint should be more effective. So that's a class of combination which I think is probably the best hope for the future when the immune system can really kick in, and that gives patients the best hope of having a very long-term durable response. And there are other subsets of combinations which will be tested, but pretty much I think combinations that make the initial hit more effective and combinations that wake up the immune system are the two types of combinations which will be most effective in the near future.
Are there any specific trials you're looking at in either pancreatic or lung cancer or any other solid tumors that are kind of going through this?
Yeah, there are many, yeah, including the drugs that we developed at the Frederick National Lab in collaboration with BridgeBio Oncology Therapeutics, who did this sort of clinical development arm of our project. So they are testing pan-KRAS drugs in combination with PI3 kinase inhibitors. For that combination and in combination with checkpoint inhibitors in lung cancer, as are many other groups, to be totally upfront. So those are the combinations which we expect to have most impact in the near future. But in pancreatic cancer, waking up the immune system turns out to be much more difficult than it is in lung cancer, because the whole environment of the tumor cells existing in pancreatic cancer is kind of immune suppressive. So just getting immune effector cells into the tumor to have them do the job is a big challenge, more so in pancreatic cancer than other indications. But that is the goal. I think one of the goals is to really hit the tumors hard enough that they start to now bring in T cells and other immune effector cells and engage the immune system. That's I think that's almost essential for it to even imagine a cure in cancer. You really have to have a lot of an immune component which will suppress regrowth of tumors in the long term. I'm really interested in studies in which patients with very early stage non-tumor types of pancreas lesions are actually being treated. lesions called Pannins, which are sort of local pre-malignant growths. If they can be targeted with some of these drugs, hopefully they'll prevent progression to a later stage of the disease when you have a better chance of therapy. So my long-term goal, which I'm trying to pursue with the support I received from the Stevenson Global Prize, which I was delighted to receive, enables me to do some research into the possibility of actually preemptively treating people or giving people drugs against KRAS, which will prevent the initiation of pancreatic cancer or lung cancer or colorectal cancer caused by KRAS. So my future dream or vision would be in the future, a person of, say, age 70 maybe will take a pill maybe every month or so, and that'll prevent the growth of any tumors caused by KRAS. So you'll never actually have initiate and never actually succumb to KRAS cancers in the first place. So that I think is now technically possible if the drugs are safe and well tolerated. A preemptive strike is going to be the best way of preventing of getting rid of pancreatic cancer in the long term.
How exactly would a pill like that work biologically or chemically to kind of help prevent people at elevated risk of disease from developing cancer?
Well, it turns out it's been well studied for pancreatic cancer that there's about a 20-year window between initiating mutations in a particular precursor cell and actually a clinical manifestation of pancreatic cancer. So in that time period, the individual has early stages of pancreatic cancer, but they just have no symptoms. So in this case, we'd intervene with a drug that targets the cause of that particular premalignant disease, which is KRAS, and then kill those cells before they have a chance to progress and become more genetically complicated and more difficult to treat. Even you yourself, a young, healthy man, you have it's somewhere inside you. You probably have some pre-malignant cells which have KRAS mutations. So if you took these drugs, those cells could theoretically be eliminated. You'd either delay or prevent ever getting tumors caused by KRAS. So to get there, we need drugs which are completely clean and free of symptoms or side effects, obviously. And have been established to be safe and effective at killing early stage KRAS lesions. But I think those things are now possible, and we can even imagine how that will play out. So that I think is the future of pancreatic cancer research, really is going to be preventive strikes that prevent initiation in the first place.
It's always great to hear strides or efforts being made towards prevention as opposed to treatment, because prevention is obviously the best way to deal with this.
It hasn't been possible previously because cancer drugs are typically toxic, as everybody understands. So no one's going to take these drugs if they haven't got some urgent need. But these new generation of drugs should be safe and well tolerated enough that prevention is now on the table.
Thank you. And so the initial reporting, the RASolute 302, was in the second line setting. I guess what would you say is the feasibility of moving RAS(ON) inhibitors? It's so early in kind of their clinical use into moving earlier lines of treatment, say first line.
I don't see any barrier to do that, really. I'm not sure exactly what the logical steps will be to get there, but if there's no other good alternative, I think that will eventually happen. But quite honestly, I can't tell you the logistical steps that we have to go through to get to that point. But I'm sure it'll happen eventually, either with the daraxonrasib or other generation KRAS inhibitors. It'll get there eventually. I just don't know when.
For oncology teams that are going to be now prescribing these drugs, whether it's oncologists, pharmacists, or even genetic counselors, what would you say is the most important thing they could understand about the KRAS biology underlying the treatment that they are going to be using?
Well, it's important to know in pancreatic cancer specifically, KRAS is the driver of the disease. That's been well established. So it causes a disease, therefore it's the right target. I think there's no real question about that. So oncologists need to appreciate that, and there's a ton of evidence from model systems to say that eliminating KRAS will have benefit to the patient. Obviously, some of the drugs, such as daraxonrasib, have side effects which need to be managed, but I think future generations of KRAS drugs will have less side effects and less issues to be dealt with. The situation in other cancers, like colorectal cancer, is not so clear. KRAS is probably not the primary driver. It's important, but there are other genetic lesions in colorectal cancer, which made the whole situation more complicated. And tumors are more polyclonal in colorectal and more difficult in many ways to deal with. Lung cancer, KRAS is one of several different drivers, and probably tumors can switch from one to the next. So it's the situation in pancreatic cancer is simpler, really. It's KRAS. And hitting that hard, the drug that's well tolerated and clean, will have definitely have patient benefit. And the other indications, it's more nuanced and complicated. Oncologist going to have to read going to read the literature very carefully. It's going to be a complicated landscape for them to navigate. Also, there are different mutations in KRAS, some of which respond to the drugs better than others. Another nuance, which is will play out over time, and we can see that it's not just one form of KRAS. There are several flavors that of KRAS, and the drugs that have been developed hit those different flavors differentially. So they may have to choose a particular drug for a particular flavor of KRAS.
Thank you for bringing that up. I do know there are a few different ones, G12C, G12D. What's the difference in kind of developing for these different flavors of KRAS that you just spoke of?
Yeah, well, the most common ones in pancreas cancer are G12D and V. And those particular proteins have the property of engaging the MAP kinase pathway, but also the PI3 kinase pathway, which is a second pathway that those particular RAS proteins are very good at activating. Drugs that hit the PI3 kinase pathway are likely to be effective for those particular alleles. But other RAS variants, like G12R, is the third most common in pancreatic cancer. That does not activate the PI3 kinase pathway. So combinations of drugs that include PI3 kinase are probably less likely to work than the G12R. Also, the arginine mutation is a big mutation, different from V and C especially. And so drugs, a lot of drugs don't attack the G12R allele as efficiently as they do the others. Also, since you asked, G12D is a slightly bigger protein than V, and it's slightly sort of floppier, and so drugs can fit into D better than V. So there's been much more success in targeting G12D than G12V. There will be pan KRAS drugs. There's going to be G12D selective, and there will be G12V and R selective coming along as well. Each needs to be tailored to the individual patient's tumor.
I guess my last question here, looking towards the future, say 10 years, even 5 years, where do you see the RAS targeted field headed, or where do you see it being?
Yeah, in that time frame, there will be several different KRAS drugs targeting each of the alleles I just mentioned, and they'll be developed in parallel for lung, colorectal, and pancreatic cancer and other indications where KRAS occurs at a lower frequency. And as you kind of referred to, the oncologist will have to choose between a variety of different options that fit the particular patient best based on theory and on empirical analysis of clinical data. And the whole field, as we discussed, will move earlier and earlier. So there'll be more emphasis on early detection and early intervention to improve outcomes. And then hopefully the pairing of targeted therapy with immune therapies will mature enough that that becomes normal, as it is in lung cancer, also in pancreatic cancer. So patients at that point can expect the possibility of actually being cured if those combinations are well tolerated and effective. And over that decade time frame, we will find a way of developing drugs which can be used in a preventative setting. And then I think then it'll be mission accomplished, because I think then we can just prevent the whole disease altogether. And that's what we all want to do. So that's going to happen in that time frame also.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or you can listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology on the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancernetwork.